Acha, the sage Maitreya said, Shama, forgiveness. Apya, receiving. Evam, thus. Saha, Long song unto Lord Shiva. Ramana, along with Lord Brahma. Cha, also. Anumantritaha, being permitted. Karma, the sacrifice. Santanayamasa, began again. Sa, along with. Upadhyaya, learned sages. Ritvik, the priests. Adivihi, and others. Translation, the great sage Maitreya said, thus being pardoned by Lord Shiva, King Daksha, with the permission of Lord Brahma, again began the performance of the yajna, along with the great learned sages, the priests, and others. You can repeat. The great sage Maitreya said, thus being pardoned by Lord Shiva, King Daksha, with the permission of Lord Brahma, again began the performance of the yajna, along with the great learned sages, the priests, and others. So there's no purport to this text. We'll need the read the next text with its translation and purport. Text 17. Vaishnavam yagya santatyai trikalpadam dvijotamaha purudasham niravapan virasang sargashudhaye. Thereafter, in order to resume the activities of sacrifice, the brahmanas first arranged to purify the sacrificial arena of the contamination caused by the touch of Virabhadra and the other ghostly followers of Lord Shiva. Then they arranged to offer into the fire the oblations known as Purodasha. So, purport by Zvangre Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Shiva's followers and devotees headed by Virabhadra are known as Viras, and they are ghostly demons. Not only do they pollute the entire sacrificial arena by their very presence, but they disturb the whole situation by passing stool and urine. Yuck. Therefore, the infection they had created was to be first purified by the method of offering Purudasa oblations. A Vishnu yajna, or an offering to Lord Vishnu, cannot be performed uncleanly. To offer anything in an unclean state is called a seva aparada. The worship of the Vishnu deity in the temple is also Vishnu yajna. In all Vishnu temples, therefore, the priest who takes care of the archana vidhi must be very clean. Everything should be always kept neat and clean, and the foodstuffs should be prepared in a neat and clean manner. All these regulative principles are described in the Nectar of Devotion. There are 32 kinds of offenses in discharging archana service. It is required, therefore, that one be extremely careful not to be unclean. Generally, whenever any ritualistic ceremony is begun, the holy name of Lord Vishnu is first chanted in order to purify the situation. Whether one is in a pure or impure condition, internally or externally, if one chants or even remembers the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, one immediately becomes purified. The yajna arena was desecrated by the presence of Lord Shiva's followers headed by Virabhadra, and therefore the entire arena had to be sanctified. Although Lord Shiva was present and he is all auspicious, it was still necessary to sanctify the place because his followers had broken into the arena and committed so many obnoxious acts. That sanctification was possible only by chanting the holy name of Vishnu. jika pala, which can sanctify the three worlds. In other words, it is admitted herein that the followers of Lord Shiva are generally unclean. They are not even very hygienic. They do not take baths regularly. They wear long hair, and they smoke ganja. Sounds like hippies. Persons of such irregular habits are counted amongst the ghosts. Since they were present in the sacrificial arena, the atmosphere became polluted, and it had to be sanctified by trikopala oblations, which indicated the invocation of Vishnu's favor. Okay, so Om Ganat Timbananda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, of course, this is an extremely important principle, and we're going to speak about this, but first we'll speak about a little history about of sacrifices being polluted. And I'm going to refer to the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana. So, of course, one of the first things that occurs in Lord Rama's pastimes, of course, after he has his childhood and is trained up, is that he is asked to guard the sacrifice of Visvamrita Muni. Visvamrita Muni comes to the kingdom of Ayodhya, and he asks for Ram, and then Lakshman comes also. And they proceed to the sacrifice. Of course, they do a few other things on the way to the sacrifice, like kill demons like Tadaka, the first demon, lady demon. Anyway, so they arrive at the sacrifice, and above the sacrifice are these demons, actually rakshasas, different types. There's different varieties of demons. Not they all come in one flavor. These are rakshasas, which means man-eaters. And the rakshasas don't want to see sacrifices performed because in this way the brahmanas and the demigods get very powerful. That's where they get their power from, sacrifices. So their business is to stop sacrifices, especially when they're trying to conquer the demigods. There's many stories about this for example, in the Mahabharata, you have the story of Sunda and Upasunda, who stopped all the sacrifices on the earth planet just to become very powerful, and eventually they had to be defeated by this very beautiful girl, Tilotama, who caused them to fight with each other. So in this particular case, you had these demons, Marich and Subahu, and their associates, who were hovering in the air over the sacrificial arena, and whenever the brahmanas started to perform their sacrifice, and you say swaha, whatever they were going to say, they would take like stool and urine and pus and blood and throw it on the sacrifice and pollute it. And in this way, the sacrifice could not be performed. And it's also interesting that Visvamrita, who had the power to kill them, to stop them, to do whatever he wanted, actually he was Brahma Rishi, you know, which means he had all the weapons and everything like that, he did not act to counteract their pollution, because he would have become polluted by acting that way, which is interesting. He would have been polluted by anger. So in addition to, let's say, external cleanliness, there's also internal cleanliness. Like Prabhupada says, when devotees took second initiation, Prabhupada would say you have to be internally clean as well as externally clean. And Prabhupada talked about externally clean means taking bath regularly, three times a day. And of course, that's one of the first things we're trained to do when we join the Krishna Conscious Movement, is when we get up in the morning, we take a bath. I remember before I joined the movement, it wasn't like that. We take a bath before we go to sleep, but not when we got up in the morning. And I asked my mother, why do we do that? And she said, well, because you don't want to pollute the bed. But Prabhupada instructed us that when people sleep, which is an actual scientific fact, I mean, obviously you should wash before you go to sleep too. I mean, you don't want to. But he instructed us when people sleep, so many interesting things come out of the pores and the mouth, you know, saliva and the, whatever else comes out of the body. So therefore, you should take a bath, and cleanse the pores, and you become healthy in that way. So cleanliness is, external cleanliness is very important. Actually, my mother trained me up. I have to give her credit for it. Not that she did everything wrong. But, for example, she told me when you go out in the street and you come back, you should wash your hands. And she showed me when you wash your hands, there's actually dirt comes off the hands. It's interesting. When you've been out in the street, you know, dirt, actually dirt, other things come off the hands. So cleanliness is extremely important. You know, so before, Prabhupada also said before eating, you wash your hands. And actually in the early days, we used to have this thing, Prabhupada actually said you wash your hands and feet. And it got a little impractical after a while because there was only one sink and the devotees were just like putting their feet in the sink, you know. Which, I don't know if anyone remembers that in the early days. But it was, in other words, there was a sink for washing hands and everybody was lined up to wash after eating. And people were just like leaning and sticking their feet in the same sink to wash their feet. It was pretty obnoxious. But anyway, but if there's facility for washing the feet, then the feet should be washed. Especially when you go into these temples like Tirumala, they actually have running water. Anyone here ever been in Tirumala before? No one's been in Tirumala. You have. They have running water right in the entrance of the temple when you're going to see Balaji. So the water actually washes everyone's feet, which is interesting. You're supposed to wash your feet when you come in the temple. I mean, sometimes it's not practical because when it's cold weather, you know. I mean, anyway, but at least before one goes in the deity room. So Prabhupada talked about external cleanliness, and then Prabhupada said internally clean, and of course internally clean means to always be chanting the Lord's holy names. Yaksmaret pundarikaksham savaya avyantara shuchi shri vishnu shri vishnu. So anyway, so getting to the point is that that's perhaps, Prabhupada makes that point, that is the most important point in the deity worship, this cleanliness. And it's not that devotees always take this so seriously, this cleanliness. When we were training the devotees up to cook when we first opened the temple or installed the deities, we instructed the devotees that the kitchen should be like clean like an operating room. What is an operating room? Operating room means the doctor, if he touches anything else, he cleans his hands. You know, you ever seen a surgeon? He enters the operating room, he has his hands like this, and then the nurse will put the gloves on, so he doesn't put the gloves on himself. The nurse will put the gloves on, the nurse will give him this, the nurse will give him that. And actually, even in the hospital, it's described that most diseases that occur in the hospital, because many people die from hospital diseases, you know, they go to the hospital and they catch a disease instead of cured from a disease, occur because of people not washing their hands, which is interesting. So anyway, so just one point I wanted to make, and I've been thinking about this, and class has given me an opportunity to make it. As far as the deity worship is concerned and the cleanliness, one of the most unclean things that I've seen in deity worship is nails. Nails mean not the things you hammer, you know, that's naturally there, but these things that are come attached to the ends of our fingers. And actually, Krishna's given me an opportunity to talk about it. So just like I take care of my Govardhan Shilas, so I actually cut my nails so much you can't see any white on them. See? No white. Don't fire until you see the white of the nails. No, white of the eyes. Anyway, so anybody who does deity worship should actually have the nails cut so short. There should be that's a strict thing for you. Lokananda Priya, you should enforce that. Anyone who cooks or does deity worship, I know the ladies, they like to have long nails somehow or other. They think it looks pretty. It doesn't. It looks like, you know, it just looks like putana to me. But, you know, so everyone, you should not be able to see the white of the nails. It should be cut so, because what happens is the dirt gets under the nails. I mean, it's a fact. I mean, unless every day, you know, you're taking like a knife and scraping under your nails, which most people don't do, the dirt is there. It's very filthy. Now, actually, Prabhupada even said when you cut your nails, Hari Bhakti Vilas says this, when you cut your nails or cut your hair, you got to bathe right afterwards. These are all impure things. And of course, normally in this world, we think these are pure things, like my hair is very pure, it's very attractive, you know, whatever. But it's actually extremely impure. So anyway, so So external cleanliness has to be there, and that's one of the most important things. Nectar Devotion talks about other types of external cleanliness, such as, you know, if your family's polluted, if someone dies in your family, you know, there's a certain period of contamination for Brahmanas, like 12 days or something like that. For Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, it's a little bit more. And so devotees should observe these things. But especially, Prabhupada said, the kitchen should be, kitchen and temple should be revolutionary clean. There was a saying in the Navy that you should be able to eat off of the decks. The deck means like the floor of the ship, in case you didn't know what that meant. Deck, you know, in a boat. So Prabhupada actually said that. And he said that, I was there in, Dallas, Texas, and Prabhupada was talking about even the Gurukula, where the kids were there. Prabhupada said it should be revolutionary clean. So people come and they're shocked by the cleanliness. Wow, it's so clean. So there's many injunctions in deity worship about cleanliness. Prabhupada said cleanliness, punctuality, and nice prasadam, or these are the most important things in deity worship. So let's get back to the sacrifice of Vishwamitra Muni, because that's what we started talking about. So anyway, these brahmanas who were doing the sacrifice were very much inclined to keep everything clean. And Vishwamitra Muni, he wanted to keep his mind clean too, because when your mind is actually polluted by lust or anger or greed, you're also unqualified to worship the deity. Actually, incidentally, Prabhupada said about worshiping deities, he said, you're approaching Brahman, so you have to be Brahman if you're going to approach Brahman. What does it mean to be Brahman? That means to be realized that you are spirit, not to be absorbed in something mundane. So it's not that you can like absorb yourself in something mundane all day long and then go on the altar, because your consciousness is not going to be any different than what you've been doing all day long. I mean, it's a fact. You know, I've seen that. Like if I'm in an airplane and somehow or other I look at the movie, or then my consciousness is thinking of what's happening in the movie for the next day or two. So even if I'm, you know, going on the altar, taking care of Giriraj, and I'm thinking of, some witch or something like that. or Superman or something like that. You know, imagine taking care of Giriraj and just painting him and thinking, oh, Superman, or something like that. So the consciousness has to be kept pure too. That means not only what you do when you're on the altar, and also means, you know, you should play pure music if you're playing music when you're on the altar, right? But also, you know, music chanted by pure personalities, or, you know, class given by pure personalities. So anyway, external and internal cleanliness Prabhupada talked about. Very, very important point. So you have to be Brahman to approach Brahman, or to deal with Brahman. You can't just be like in mundane consciousness. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be decorating the deities just to, you know, show off, or just advertise your expertise in dressing the deities and being interested in people appreciating your skills in dressing the deities. So deity worship is like that. One has to be extremely careful to be on the Brahman platform while they're worshiping the deities. That's Prabhupada's statement. Anyway, so let's get back to the point of Vishwamitra Muni's sacrifice. So he was performing this sacrifice and couldn't get angry, because that would have polluted his consciousness. He had taken a vow also not to talk. Sometimes people take vows not to talk. It's called monavrata. That's to avoid prajalpa, you know, talking about mundane things. I was just listening to a class of Prabhupada where Prabhupada was talking about how we should not waste any time, and then Prabhupada went through this whole list, atyahara prayasas cha prajalpa niyamagraha, that's in the Nectar of Instruction. And Prabhupada said, you know, talking about, and Prabhupada said, you talk about Richard Nixon, because at that time Nixon was president. You know, you talk about Richard Nixon doing this, Richard Nixon doing that. Of course, we don't talk about Richard Nixon anymore. We talk about Barack Obama or the stock market or something like that. Prabhupada said it's a waste of time. And Prabhupada actually was talking in this class how you can't buy back any time. He said, Prabhupada said, even one moment. Prabhupada was giving the example. He said, I'm 78 years old. He said, if I want to be 77, even with millions and millions of dollars, I'm not going to be 77 years old. And you realize that as you get older, you know, you realize how important time is, to use time properly, how, you know, the different, I mean, your senses are actually basically disintegrating as you're getting older, you know, or falling apart as you're getting, your eyesight is not going to work as well, your teeth are going to get loose and fall out, or you're going to have to get false teeth. It's like Mother Tulsi's going to the doctor to measure again and adjust her false teeth for her, right? So, and anyway, in the ears, you may have problems hearing because you've gone to too many kirtans when you were young, and you always hear the ringing and you think, oh, I'm on the spiritual platform because I'm always hearing the cartels 24 hours a day. Or I'm hearing Krishna's flute because you're hearing this high-pitched noise coming. Anyway, so the time factor is like this, so you shouldn't be wasting any time. So getting back to Viswamitra Muni's sacrifice, the demons that were throwing pus and urine, he couldn't get angry. And so Lord Ram, the Kshatriya, acting as a Kshatriya, was employed to defend against these demons, these Rakshasas. And what he did is he fired an arrow and sent Marich like 800 miles away into the ocean, because he had some plans for Marich later on. You know, he knew that Marich would actually take the form of the golden deer and later on be killed by him. And then Sabahu he killed. Previously he had killed their mother, so. So that way, that's interesting. He killed their mother so the mother wouldn't get angry that her sons were killed. So if you got to kill someone's sons, you should kill the mother first. Anyway, so, no, just joking. So that's one instance of a polluted sacrifice. And the Lord defending the Brahmins so their sacrifice could go on. Now, there's another instance in the Ramayana of where it was good that the sacrifice was polluted. This is a really interesting story. This story involves part of the fight when they were in Lanka. Now, that means not just Ravana and company, but Lord Ram and the monkeys, they were fighting the Rakshasas in Lanka. So as they were fighting the Rakshasas in Lanka, you know, Indrajit could see that the monkeys were winning. Monkeys and Lord Ram were winning. And he thought, you know, what can I do at this point? So Indrajit remembered that he had a boon from Lord Brahma, and that boon was that if he propitiated his family deity, which is called Nikumbila. Nikumbila was his family deity. Anyway, I guess it's an expansion of Durga or something like that, or one of the demigods. It's not described in the Ramayana who she actually is. Anyway, so if he propitiated this demon, propitiated means, you know, cause the deity to manifest herself, to give him mercy, to answer his prayers. That's what propitiated means. Anyway, said that if he performed the sacrifice to propitiate the deity, then he would get this chariot. And this chariot, and he would get invulnerability, and nobody could defeat him. Because he actually asked Lord Brahma for that benediction. Generally, the demons, they're asking the demigods or Lord Brahma for the benediction of not being killed. So instead, Lord Brahma says, you know, I can't give you that benediction, but I can let you choose how you're going to die, basically. Or I can give you another benediction whereby you're thinking you're invulnerable, but you're actually not invulnerable, and you're thinking, or that benediction will actually predict the way you're going to die. And that's what happened in the case of Indrajit. Indrajit said, when he asked for benediction, I want a chariot. Once I'm seated on that chariot, I'll be invulnerable. And so Lord Brahma said, okay, you can have that chariot after you propitiate your family deity, Nikumbila. But, there's a big but, Lord Brahma said, but if the sacrifice in which you're propitiating the deity, Nikumbila, is interrupted for any reason, then guess what? It's curtains for you, Indrajit. That's when you're going to die. So Indrajit had this secret cave in which he had the deity in. Practically nobody knew where the cave was, except a few family members. They knew where the cave was. So he retired to the secret cave. And Lakshman and Lord Ram were wondering, you know, what happened with Indrajit? We were just fighting him, and he's gone. Is he run away? Is he afraid of us? And course, Vibhishan, who was a family member of the Rakshasas, he was the best of the night rovers. The Rakshasas are called the night rovers because they like it at night. You know, they come alive like at 9 o'clock at night. They're like modern people. You know, we're supposed to be early morning rovers and day rovers, not right night rovers. Except on Janmashtami, it's all right to be a night rover. But anyway, so what happened? Lord Rama said, Vibhishan, you have something to say? You're best of the night rovers? Because he was the best of the night rovers because he was a devotee, obviously. And Vibhishan said, look, I know what Indrajit is doing. He's actually going to this cave where Nikumbila is. And he's performing the sacrifice. And once he finishes performing the sacrifice, then he'll be invulnerable. And we're going to be finished. We're going to be dead. All of us. And so, it's a secret cave, he said. But I know where it is. So he took Lakshman there. Lakshman went there, along with Hanuman and some of the Sugriva and some of the monkeys, all right. And out of the cave, the mouth of the cave, they actually saw the smoke coming because they were doing the sacrifice. And he was going, I don't know if he's doing swaha, but he was doing something, you know. He's going, Kumbila, boom, blah, 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 like that. Swaha, whatever. I don't know that sacrifice that well. And so as he was doing it, you know, Hanuman and the monkeys attacked him and he was just kept stay away. But Hanuman employed his secret weapon to defile the sacrifice. He passed urine on the sacrifice. And by passing urine, of course, it put the fire out. Fire extinguisher. Anyway, so it put the fire out, but at the same time, it polluted the sacrifice. I mean, the sacrifice was finished at that point. Hanuman did that sometimes. Like, you, even when he was destroying the Ashok Grove, some of the soldiers attacked him and he just passed urine in their mouths, you know. And they said, what are you doing? And Hanuman said, I'm a monkey. What do you want? So anyway, so interesting story. So Hanuman passed urine on the sacrifice. And when he passed urine on the sacrifice, what happened? Of course, sacrifice is finished. Indrajit came out angry. And he attacked Lakshman, and one thing led to another, and eventually Indrajit died. Like that. So that comes from pollution of a sacrifice. That's not a sacrifice we want to pollute. The sacrifice of the demons. And actually you see, demons, they do perform sacrifices sometimes. Like that, like black magic sacrifices and everything like that. I remember when I was in charge of Caracas, Venezuela, there was a witches' conference, and they had sacrifices there. And, you know, just like you see in Macbeth, you know, eye of newt, you know, whatever it is, boil, double trouble, cauldron burn, cauldron bubble. They actually do that. There actually is witchcraft. And Brazil, there's actually witchcraft, black magic, too. Anyway, I've told the story before about the voodoo of the lady who wanted to marry a brahmachari, and she got him to follow her and get married. You know, she had a little doll of him. Instead of sticking pins in it, the doll, she kissed the doll. And it was curtains for the guy. Pins would have been preferable. Anyway, so... you know, I'd rather have pins stuck in my doll. Anyway, so... So there is this black magic, and it's all right to stop those sacrifices. It's all right to pollute those sacrifices. You see one of those sacrifices going on, go ahead and pass urine on it. So there's no problem. But... anyway, but Krishna consciousness. So let's get back to Krishna consciousness and the cleanliness of the sacrifice that we have to perform. That's why before we do a fire sacrifice, we always chant this mantra, Om apavitra pavitrava sarvavastam gatopiva yaksmaret pundarikaksham sabhaya avyantara shuchi shri vishnu shri vishnu shri vishnu. And that's an important part. That's called purushcharya. Or here it's purudasha. Sometimes described as puracharya, means comes before. Means the act, ascharya means the activity, pura means before, okay? Or puradasha means the service that was performed before. Puradarsa Pura Archa. So anyway, which what means Oma Pavitra Pavitrava, whether one is purified or unpurified. In other words, whatever one's situation is at present, whether one is born of the Brahmin family or a Shudra family or whatever, or a Western family or a Jewish family, Pavitrava Sarva Vashtam Gatopiva, then if one remembers the lotus-eyed Lord, Pundarik Aksham, Savaya Avyantara Shuchi, then he actually becomes purified. So that's the purpose of the Achman, to purify yourself through the mantra, which is really interesting. So so that's the standard type of Vedic or fire sacrifice which you have to do this Purusharya for. Whereas, as far as the Yuga Dharma, the Nama Yagya, so to speak, you don't have to do a Purusharya before that. In other words, or a Prayaschitta. Prayaschitta means like atonement. Purusharya means things you do before to actually purify yourself or purify the arena. And Prayaschitta means you've done something wrong, so you better just like make yourself suffer to atone. Like in the Jewish religion, they have the Day of Atonement. It's called Yom Kippur. That means one day a year you atone and you say, "My Lord, forgive me for what I did. Forgive me, forgive me." And you fast for half a day. And that's it. That's the atonement. Of course, as Vidyakantaka Nishkritam, as described in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnur Jangan Mangala Mahangasam Mahatam Apikoravya Vidyakantaka Nishkritam. The best method of atonement is Sankirtan. Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnur. You don't have to do other things. Like if you've done something wrong, and we all do things wrong, we all make mistakes, we all slip up from time to time, it's not that you have to just like torture yourself by wearing a hair shirt or something like that. You know what a hair shirt is? Like they did in the Catholics. One time I went into Ripley's Believe It or Not in New York. You know what that is? Ripley's Believe It or Not. Anyone ever been there? You know, half your life is wasted. You haven't been there. It showed the different things the monks did in the for atonement in the monasteries. It's really amazing stuff, you know. Hair shirts and all sorts of like stretch. You know, they had a stretcher thing. It's good for your back. But anyway, it was... You know, there were tortures there and also methods of atonement that the monks used. I mean, I would never want to be a monk in a monastery. What a... At least that type of monastery. What kind of hair? I don't know what kind of hair. I didn't put it on. But it was itchy. It's like when I was young, my mother used to make me wear a wool suit and I went to the temple, not Hare Krishna temple, but other temple. It was itching. Ooh, this is atonement for my sins. So if we've done something wrong, it's not that we have to atone, we chant Hare Krishna. That's the method of atonement, which is interesting. So, in other words, because it's described by Maharaj Parikshit that if one simply tortures themselves, they don't actually purify their hearts anyway. So what I wanted to get to is actually the chanting of the Lord's holy names doesn't require Purusharya, and it's described, Niyamena Tishtam, there's no rules and regulations, you can do it anywhere, there's no pure or impure place as far as the chanting of the Lord's holy name is. You can even chant in the bathroom while you're, not with your beads, of course, while you're doing your thing in the bathroom. You can chant that. You should chant 24 hours a day. There's no consideration of pure or impure because just by chanting, everything becomes pure. That's what I wanted to get to. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.